Hey, this is Tag Kristoff, and you're listening to the Wasted Hour podcast.
Good evening, this is Martin, and welcome to another episode of the Wasted Hour podcast, the podcast about fashion, artists, inspiration, and creative culture. And I'm very happy to introduce today's guest, art director, editor, and photographer, and huge personal inspiration, Tag Kristoff. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Martin.
So I think I mentioned it in the introduction for the View series you did for the Wasted Hour in January that you were one of the first photographers that I discovered on Instagram back in the day. And do you remember what's the first picture on your feed?
Oh my God. Yeah, I totally do remember what the first picture on my feed is. I made a gingerbread house of a Rem Koolhaas building. And I think I did like a step-by-step picture of building the gingerbread house. It was the CCTV building in Beijing, so this crazy kind of like Mobius strip of a building. I think that's the first picture I put on there like a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. It
must have been like 2011, 2012, something like that.
Exactly, around
the time. Crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think like that's the first image, and the second image is like totally like, some architecture as well, you know, like blue skies and like the, what I would say, typical aesthetic style from you, which directly like it's to the core.
That's
and
so
I
funny.
Think, yeah. And I think like shortly around the time after, because I've checked like how long I'm on Instagram, and I think it's around 2011, 2012 as well. And I think
yeah, the
I
whole started, world got on then.
Yeah. I think that when I started like following you.
That's cool. Wow. It's crazy. I had no idea you followed for so long.
Yeah.
I was just thinking though, like, when did Instagram come out? Do you know? 2009, 2010, maybe?
I think around the
so
time. Yeah.
I actually started using it before that with a different screen name. And I thought that the idea of just taking a picture and making it this instant thing and it was supposed to be so cool was bullshit. So I started posting film photos. It's like, fuck Instagram. It's stupid. It's just cheap. It's dumb. And I even wrote an essay for this blog that I was working for at the time about how Instagram was the death of photography. So 10 years later, I know I was totally wrong. It only took maybe a couple of years after it came out to catch on to it. And I don't know. Instagram's cool. Even, you know, as complicated and crazy as it seems to get all the time, it's still a cool platform. I've met so many cool people through it.
Especially like we wouldn't have met too, you know, like if
right,
it wouldn't be for the community.
This is a good case in point.
Yeah. Do you remember like you were putting already like film photographs out back then? Like, do you remember like the first photograph that she took that made you feel like proud, or the thing that you're oh, I'm good at this?
I don't think I've ever taken that photo, man.
Because like for me is when I looked at your style and like actually like I looked at those colors and I was asking a friend, I was like, how do you achieve this look? Like, I was not as stupid thinking it was a filter, but I was just like the pictures look different like on here. And it was like because back then you also did like a lot of film photography as well.
I post a little bit less of it these days, but So my trajectory into photography was kind of a weird one. I studied industrial design, and then I ended up working for a photography agency in Milan. And the guy who was the creative director of the photography agency was an amazing photographer, and he shot 8x10s, these beautiful, like, giant black and white 8x10 photos. And I had this crappy little digital camera, and he would make fun of me all the time and just tell me, like, I didn't know what I was doing, and I had no business working there because I didn't know how to take photos, and just kind of in a playful way. And so, like, through him, I bought a little Rolly 35 and started walking around Milan taking pictures, and little by little got a little better at it. I think I was always kind of drawn to the same subject matter that I still continue to photograph. And I think it's more, you asked about, like, when I took a photo that I was proud of, I think it was more a question of like, I consistently made photos of something that got a response from people. And I think that's what Instagram sort of does, for better or for worse, right? It gets you to develop a style, and it gets you to kind of focus on a thing that in some way becomes a brand, and you kind of just interplay with that. And yeah, it's a really weird give and take. I think it pigeonholes a lot of people, for sure, but it also helps people. The feeds that you see with photos of singular things, right? Like, some of them are incredible. These minimalist feeds that, you know, they're just so cool. Fashion feeds of just like one piece of clothing or something. It's cool.
I would love to dive into your history as well, because you already mentioned that you studied industrial design, but like before that, you were born in Los Alamos in New Mexico, right?
Yeah. How did you know that?
I did some research, of course, before the interview. It's a really small town. It has around 12,000 inhabitants or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
small town.
Yeah. How was it growing up there?
So I didn't actually grow up there. New Mexico is a pretty, it's a weird state. And my family's from Santa Fe. I'm from Santa Fe, but the hospital there wasn't supposed to be very good back in the day. You can leave this part out of the podcast. But the hospital in Los Alamos just happened to be better because there's a laboratory there.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. So my mom drove up the hill, had me, went back down.
So, but you said that it's a strange state so far, because I've never been, but what do you associate with New Mexico?
What do I associate with New Mexico?
Yeah.
I think most people think about turquoise and maybe aliens and Georgia O'Keeffe, and I don't know. For me, it's just this beautiful emptiness. It's such it's magical in the way that it's just there. It feels like there's some mystical energy in the emptiness that's there. The skies are beautiful. The air is super clear. Most of it's super high elevation, so the light's really different than it is elsewhere in the Southwest. So I like that. I go home and I drive an old car that I keep in storage there, explore a little bit, taking photos. It's cool.
Amazing. How did you end up studying industrial design?
So I did my first degree in economics, actually, and I went to work at a bank. I was super young when I finished high school, so I finished college a little bit early. Went to work at a bank, hated it. I think I wanted to jump out a window. It was so awful. I lasted maybe 2 weeks.
Oh God, and, so fast?
Yeah, it was that bad. And I went home and my parents encouraged me to go back to school, so I did. And I think I wanted to do something that was... I wanted to do art somehow, but that seemed like a more practical alternative to sculpture or just plain furniture making or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
But later on, in industrial design, when you were finished and you were thinking about how you could work there, you also saw yourself confronted, maximize profits for bigger companies as well. Right.
And then I mean, so I think it was this continual process of just being turned off by corporate life, right? You go down these paths in education and then you just realize oh crap, is this really what I want to spend my life in the service of, right? And I think I've kind of found a way around that by doing photography, because you still take part in the system in a way, right? You're not raging against the machine, but you're making commentary on it rather than contributing to the thing. I don't know. I didn't want to design dashboards for Ford or, I don't know, blenders for Brown or something like that, you know? I just didn't feel comfortable doing that. I've always loved form and I like the process of design, but the idea that you're just making things, as an industrial designer specifically, the idea that you're just making things in these serial numbers that end up in landfills, it really bothered me. Yeah. I think I really had wanted to be an architect before, but I thought that you had to be better at math. Little did I know you didn't really need all that much math for architecture, but whatever. So.
But did you, you mentioned it before, did you move to Milan after finishing industrial design, or?
I went to grad school after I lived in Milan, but yeah, I had studied industrial design before I moved there. I went there because that's where you go as a designer, right? Everybody wants to move to Milan who's a designer. It's where all the cool big companies are, and they make things there. That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of one of the only places in the West that still really has like a ton of factories outside the cities, and they make really good shit there.
Yeah, and then you were there as an agent in a fashion agency as well.
Yeah, I worked in a fashion photography agency. I interned there first, and then I just kind of slowly started to do all sorts of other things. I got involved in their editorial side, but I did everything from like put together portfolios to answer phones to art direction of shoots and all kinds of stuff.
Was it also like around that time that you did like the campaign shoot for presidents, like for the?
Oh, that was way later. There were some friends that were kind of involved with that agency, but they bought an archival print essentially from my collection to go along with some stuff. But that was a pretty cool campaign. I think it was like Ari Markopoulos. I can't remember who else was in it. There was a ton of other pretty cool photographers.
Yeah, no, that
was maybe one of the first moments where I was like, "Holy shit, this is amazing! I get to be among these people." Whoa, cool.
And then after Milan, you eventually dived into architecture as well, because when you studied at Central St. Martin's in London, you used the time at university to dive into this topic as well. Could you say what was like, you said you always wanted to be like an architect or something like that. Can you say what one of the first buildings that really inspired you, or the first architect that triggered something in you?
There's so many, but the moment that I realized, I just had this like existential moment where I just realized I wanted to be an architect, right? At like 24, I was standing in the Barbican in London. I'm sure that building does it to a lot of people. Yeah. It's incredible. Have you been there?
Yes, I've been there.
It's incredible, yeah. Right? It's just this all-encompassing vision, right? Like this architect made the world, remade the world kind of in his own image. And I think that's the dream of all people who do design in some way. And I had this realization that I wanted to be involved in that somehow.
Yeah. How did you experience living in London, like compared to Milan?
London's cooler. I mean, Milan is awesome. There's a really entrenched culture there. The food's amazing. The drinks are amazing. The people are amazing. It's very much a city that kind of lives by the cycles of fashion, right? So there's fashion weeks, and it kind of ebbs and flows, and there's Salone del Mobile, and all the people come. But when it's off fashion week time, it's off Salone del Mobile time. It's a very quiet city. I think it's changed a lot in the past maybe 10 years after it was the International Capital Design. But London, I mean, it's a completely different kind of thing. It's just 24/7 on all the time, like New York.
Yeah. Right? And you lived in Hackney, right?
Yeah, for a little while. I lived right on Broadway Market.
Amazing.
Neighborhood so much.
Yeah. what the listeners can't see, like, I can see your eyes, and I saw like in your head reminiscing just like in a quick shot.
So good.
About those days. Have you been back to London since then?
I haven't been back since probably 2016. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine what London must be like now during COVID. I still talk to a lot of friends who were there and stuff, but it's sad to imagine not being able to go to a pub or I'm thinking about like the Columbia Road Flower Market on a Saturday morning. It's just full of people, and that's magical, right? You just get swept along, and you can smell these flowers everywhere, and it's beautiful blue skies most Saturday mornings, and nice pubs at both ends of the street, and you can't do that now. It's so sad.
I think it's one of those cities, like, too, when I just imagine it being in lockdown, like, it's
dead.
So
I think of this. So London, New York, obviously, I can't imagine what it must be like even to get around there, right? You can't ride the subway, you can't, it's crazy. And then Las Vegas, which I visited three times during COVID lockdown, and to see, it's incredible. To understand that something like this can interrupt humanity on such a grand scale is bonkers.
Yeah. I specifically ask about all those places because, like, you've moved around, like, I think so much, and you also lived for a time in New York as well, right?
Yeah, that's where I went to college.
Yeah. Because, like, for me, it's always, like, when I travel around and I'd be, like, in cities, like, it always, like, inspires me very much, like, just, like, being in London or, like, being in New York as well. And... Yeah. but you don't like stay in the same place for a long time. And I think, I don't know when, but for me, when I followed you on Instagram, also I saw that you're always like on road trips, like just like driving around town. How did that start? Like, when was the initial moment to say like, I'm going on a road trip?
It's cool to think of how Instagram makes it look like that's what's going on, right? You take like 3 road trips a year and it looks like you can just spread the photos out and make it look like you're always going. I feel like my backstory is like super confusing, layer upon layer upon layer, but I had gotten into a graduate program in Chicago that I was going to go to. I moved to Chicago, didn't love it there. The school was really expensive and I didn't want to get into a ton of student. I made a bunch of considerations, decided just not to do it. And so I was feeling pretty lost. And this was a couple of years after I kind of gotten fairly serious about photography. And so I went back to New Mexico, borrowed a car and just drove. And I ended up in Miami where I had a friend, slept on the beach along the way, just kind of like went exploring and it was all kind of like from that trip. I had such a good time. I was only out on the road for about maybe 15 days or so. But I had never done a road trip, like a real road trip by myself. And I loved it. It was cool. You can just talk to people. You can go wherever the hell you want. You can be whoever you want. You can, I don't know. It's cool. Yeah. It's liberating and freeing to be on the road.
I remember it too, that you wrote that it was like a transitional phase that you did like the road trip and you were in some kind of like crisis before and you just got into the car and then over the trip.
So I quit this grad program and I was like, shit, I'm not going to ever be a designer. Like, this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And now I don't know. You know, I had already gone back to college for something else. And in the meanwhile, I had been working in Milan, but that wasn't in the same field. And so I just kept convincing myself, like, you just need to go forward with this career. And I just kind of realized slowly that it wasn't the right direction for me. So I eventually did end up going back to Milan, getting my job back. And then the year after that, I went to grad school in London. That's when I moved to Central St. Martins. But yeah, it was like this moment where I was just kind of lost and I had no direction and just felt good to like put some miles behind me, you know? Yeah. I'm sure you've done that before, right? Traveling is always like that. Because part of the going forward is leaving something behind you.
Yeah. And it's, that's what it's I also nice. Wanted to ask. Like, is it like, I think like the initial starting point, like for a road trip is always to get away from something. And I think the charming part from driving in a car that you can see the miles that you travel, you know, because you look at the outside and the landscape is changing and people are changing and like signs are changing. And I think it does something to you.
Definitely.
Along the way. So I think you've done like quite a number of those road trips too. And what's like, do you also like, is there like a very interesting story that you can share, like someone along the road that you've met, like that really inspired you, that's like pops to your head?
Oh my God, I've met so many people. I think it's, I don't know if I can point to one specific person, but I think when you're completely out of your context, you talk to people who you might not otherwise talk to when you're at home, and people who might not otherwise talk to you. If you're sitting at like a truck stop diner and you know there's somebody sitting next to you whose politics are totally different, but they don't know that because you're sitting in a damn truck stop diner in Iowa. They just assume that you're, you know, from down the street or something. And I don't know, those things really kind of have helped me understand things a little bit better, and I think kind of continue to want to be a pragmatic person because things have gotten so polarized. Especially in this country. I know Europe has gotten bad, but it's still not quite as bad as it's gotten in the States. And so I'm not a Trump supporter by any stretch of the imagination. I fucking hate Trump. But I've talked to Trump people who they're not necessarily like monstrous evil people if you're just talking to them on a kind of one-to-one, face-to-face basis. I think you just kind of understand people on a human level in a way that you just wouldn't otherwise. I have 200 stories, but I don't know like, there's a
you have to publish them someday in a book, just like
I get like my favorite I guess would be just talking to I love talking to waitresses and little restaurants, and I've gotten some pretty good portraits of them over the years. But you know, like, there's something charming about a kind person who comes and brings you coffee and chats with you, and a lot of times they have really interesting stories to tell.
Yeah.
And I've gone back and visited people that I've just met, like, in diners and stuff over the years, and I've made some good friends. Definitely people who I wouldn't have known otherwise, you know? People who are way older than me, way younger than me. It's cool.
I think, like, it's so interesting that you say that you just, like, want to understand, like, the country, because, like, and then your nickname on Instagram was America's Dad, like, yeah. Which also was, like, for some people was really, like, controversial. And you also, like, developed, like, during the road trips, of course, like, you took a lot of photos that, like, documented, like, empty, like, old abandoned shopping malls and just, yeah. Like, but I never saw it in a sense that you were like, oh, this country is over and everything. I just want, it was like, for me, it was a documentary, like, I'm traveling around the country and this is what it looks like and what I'm trying to take in and digest and
yeah,
and understand.
I think things have changed so much that you can't really separate those things anymore, right? Because I was really interested in kind of the urban design problems of all of these giant spaces that were empty. And I mean, I like them as pieces of design. Some of these places were just beautiful, beautiful giant buildings. And I was just blown away at, you go to the parking lot of a dead mall and it's crazy. It's like the size of a cathedral, and it was full of people just a few years before, and then it's completely empty, and the neighborhoods moved on. And so I was just really interested in those things. There have been a lot of people who've tried to capture those things in photographs. Some have done really amazing job. Like, Brian Ulrich has probably taken the best dead mall photos of anybody. He's an amazing photographer. He's a professor at RISD. I was interested in that primarily, just kind of the kind of throwaway economy, the way that conspicuous consumption leads to these huge disasters in the long run. And that was kind of the purview, and that's what America's Dead was kind of all about. And as the politics have changed, it's been really hard to kind of separate that message from the reality that there's real polarization, and there's 200,000 people have died of COVID in this country this year. And it's, you know, so yeah, the name became pretty controversial, and I was getting a lot of slack for it. It got to the point where I was getting threats, and I was getting some kind of scary stuff. And so I just had to get rid of it.
Yeah. So, I also read a story that you, like, you were on some ground that you shouldn't have been to, and you got, like, not, like, cops arrived. And they would have let you go, but then they looked up, like, your Instagram name.
Yeah, that was still so stupid. That was years ago, though. This was before this was, like, yeah, it was in Vegas. There was an old, like, a big old hotel that was being demolished. It wasn't being demolished; it was being renovated, but it was closed. And I walked through a little hole in the fence, and of course they caught me. Like, the security guards caught me right away, and yeah, they called the cops. The security guards zip tied me to a phone line, and I was trying to explain to them that I was a photographer, and they were like, cool, show us your stuff, we see your camera, whatever. And the guy saw my I think it was my Tumblr, I don't even think it was my Instagram, and he just lost it when he saw the name of it. Like, I was this communist infiltrator that was gonna, like, blow up a building or something like that. So that was scary. Didn't end up putting me in jail, but it was one of those close calls where, you know, you realize that your politics and kind of, like, who you signify that you are out in the world, it really kind of that decides where you get to go and who you get to be. And I think those are some of the major questions that are being brought up by the political movements that are happening right now, right? Black Lives Matter is important in this country because the central premise of it is that if you look a certain way, you don't get to be in this country the way that other people do, right? And that's true in so many dimensions, right? If you just look different, if you act different, if you have different politics, if you, you know, and so that's why those things are kind of so germane to everybody. And I thought I would probably be better off in the long run if I just decided not to make it there's no way for that thing not to be controversial.
Yeah. But I also, what I love about the, your account is that you like from time to time speak also your mind about stuff, like that you weigh in on some like political discussions or what or debates that's cool. going on, and you put your thoughts like together. And I think like even like in the current times when you say just your opinion, you always, especially like a person like you has like a lot of followers, there's always like the fear of perhaps of having like a huge backlash about it. But like
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten some backlash, but I think as you get older, you just get a little bit less nervous about that shit. And at the same time, you realize you kind of have to stand up for yourself. I always feel a little bit silly going out on a limb and saying something. And it's very unfashionable to be pragmatic, to attempt to see both sides of an issue. And I really, really try to. The story that I tell everybody, and I don't know if it's super appropriate, but I have two sisters. One is a cloistered nun, one is a trans woman, and they're both really good people, but they hate each other. They hate each other. And I obviously agree with the politics of my trans sister a hell of a lot more than I do with the politics of my cloistered nun sister, but I try to have open conversations with both of them, and you know, like the humanity and the consideration and the feelings that go into both are super valid. And I wish that I could build a bridge between the two of them. But if I just like went off on a crazy limb and was like, oh, this, you're completely wrong. And I don't know. I don't think that helps anything. And so I always just try. And that's not the singular reason, but that's probably the most like illustrative reason in my life that I try to see both sides of the coin. And a lot of times that gets you in trouble, right? You say something that isn't necessarily right in line with what everybody thinks is right to say at the moment. And that's kind of hard to like, it's kind of hard to figure out how to do that in a way that doesn't put people off. But yeah, like I want to hear people out. And I think that it's better if we still, you know, there's not much civility in the discourse in general, but I think if we try to listen to each other rather than just giving up on it, that's the only way we can get anywhere in the future, truly.
I totally
I'm super worried about it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with this, because what I'm missing these days is because, like, of course, like, there is a debate over a lot of things, and what I've found out for myself is that if you just, like, listen to like, people and just, like, even if it's not your opinion, but, like, hear them out, and then you can discuss it, and you can just like get your point across. And for me, it's not about like, oh, I have better arguments than you, and it's just like a ping pong match going back and forth. You can learn like so much, like just like thinking about it for like a day or two, and then.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I agree with you. But that said, at the same time, we also have to like call out when we hear real bullshit, because there's a lot of stuff that's just real fucking bullshit. Like, there's no excuse for saying some of the things that people think it's okay to say these days, right? Like, climate change is not real, the earth is flat, like, you know, stuff that's just so far out that no sane person who's not buying into some crazy conspiracy theory thinks this stuff. And I think giving too much oxygen to these things really is, that's hurting us. So at the same time, is yes, you have to listen to when there is an earnest opinion on both sides, but there's some things that are just not fucking open to argument.
Yes.
There are just some things that are not open to argument. And I think that instead of giving people who choose to just like bullshit all the time and spread lies, we just need to ignore them.
Yes.
The best thing to do is just ignore them.
100% too. That's
and
the
part
two.
I think it's true. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's literally the question of our time, right?
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, what's not really political as well as, but you also, I think, I don't know how long it was ago, you also officially came out on Instagram as well, like through a post as well as being gay. Was this a huge step for you?
I don't think that was the first time that I'd ever said it but I think it's the first time that I put my face to it. Right? Like, I shared a photo of, is that the post you're talking about? I shared a photo of my boyfriend and I.
No, you. I think it was a self portrait. I think it was the a Polaroid or something like that. That's how I remember it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess I don't remember. So honestly, like for me, I've never really. I guess I tried to keep myself out of the work that I put up for the longest time, right? It wasn't supposed to be about me. And I still don't feel like it is. But yeah, I guess it was a little bit scary to do that. But I think that we kind of have to practice what we preach some ways in terms of the way we live, right? And I think that our goal is, if you're gay, like, you kind of want it to be a non-event, right? It shouldn't be a big deal to come out. It shouldn't be something that you have to be scared about. On that same token, I don't think you should have to have a coming out party, right? It should just be kind of like a given thing. I just think making a big deal out of it one way or another is kind of counterproductive.
Yeah.
Not to say that you shouldn't celebrate yourself or, you know, do what feels right to you. But yeah, I just, I don't know. But I think a lot of people were, especially because of that screen name, they were kind of just reading into who I was. And I had to correct that. It was more kind of a question of that. Like, people assumed that I was either like a hardcore Trump supporter or that I was like, I don't know, that was going to blow up a building or something like that. I don't know. It's just really hard to know. Like, you put something out and it takes on a life of its own quite often.
Totally.
And I think it was just kind of one of my attempts to just take back my own narrative in a little way. Yeah. So, yeah.
But I always like appreciate, like I said before, the honesty, like in your, not only on your pictures, but also like in your posts as well. And I think what also like really, it was so strange because back at the, when you, like I followed you on like on social media and like over years, and you see like the transitions, like not only like the development of the photographical style and everything, but also like on a personal way as well. And I think like the first time when I sent a request like for you doing a view series, when I felt ready to send a request for you.
For
a view series. It was like one of the posts where you just like wrote underneath that somewhere in the last 5 years you lost yourself so badly. And this was a really like,
oh,
when
man.
When I had like the face that you were like in a kind of a very dark place as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd be lying if I didn't say that you spend so much time in these places like Instagram or whatever, and you don't necessarily seek out the validation that people give you, but sometimes you just kind of need to hear like, hey, you know, like it's cool that you're there or whatever. And I guess I have a tendency to sort of put things like that out when I'm in not the greatest place. Yeah, I guess I had not made that connection beforehand, but you're right. Like every time I put up a selfie, that means there's some introspection going on, I guess. But yeah, I remember that. I was on a road trip like through Colorado or something, and I put up that post. That's very cool that you remember that. It's very kind of you.
Yeah, I think it was around the time during the road trip that we connected. So I remember that.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So, more like of a technical question as well. Like, has your, like, we mentioned before that you were photographing like on film as well, but also of mm-hmm. course like digital too. Has it, did that change in the past years? Like your setup or?
Oh yeah, the setup's changed like hardcore since I started. So I was shooting, I think the one constant is I've always shot a lot on like a Leica M mount camera. So I used to have just like a Voigtlander Bessa rangefinder. It's basically a cheap version of a Leica. And my mom very kindly gifted me a Leica M6 like 4 years ago, and I've used that pretty consistently ever since. That's the camera that I keep on me all the time.
Yeah.
And I have a whole setup for that, and that's just kind of like my standard go-to camera. But I was shooting a lot of medium format film. I've shot a fair bit of 4x5, but over the past couple of years, I just totally paired back, got rid of all of my film cameras except for the Leica, and I now just shoot digital medium format, and I've got a little Fuji camera. So I shoot like Fuji GFX 50R and a Fuji X-T4.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny that she said it, because like when I started doing like analog photography too, I was all like diving into it. For me, it was all about the gear and everything. Like, and I tried like so many different cameras.
Yeah, always is.
And then like now I'm at this point where I'm like, I need like one camera, one digital, one analog, and like that's it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah, no, you realize it's just kind of like, I've got one friend who travels in a pickup truck, and the dude, I swear to God, must have like 50 cameras with him at any given point. Like the whole bed of his truck is filled with cameras and film and stuff. And I have to give it to him, man. The guy makes it work. He just goes out there. He spends entire days just in the field making photos, and it's cool. But I just find it such a distraction to have to worry about the modalities of a different camera and all that stuff. So, but also I think the other, everybody talks about how the gear is not important, and it's just, that's kind of half bullshit. It's kind of true, but it's kind of half bullshit. You need a camera that you're comfortable with. You need one that's going to make an image that you're happy with, if you're going to print it, if you're whatever. But the technology for digital cameras has come so far in the past like 3-4 years that you can get some insanely good stuff that you couldn't a few years ago, especially if you're shooting like architecture and landscapes and things like that. You've got these insanely high resolution cameras that are less than $10,000 now that you can shoot and basically get the same print results that you would have on a 6x7.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think so too. And for me, it's not like a versus, like digital versus analog. I think
They complement each other.
I think totally too. But yeah. can you say what fascinates you about film, like analog cameras?
So I guess I keep shooting 35mm film. I've almost completely stopped shooting medium format. Not that medium format doesn't have its place, but that I've always liked mechanical things. And I think having something that has a chemical process rather than an electronic process, like film, where you're doing something that you actually see matter make a difference to the other matter and the thing and have a reaction, then you end up with this negative that you can then enlarge or print or whatever. That's just it's a fascinating thing. You never know what you're going to get. It's exciting. It's tough to work that way, but if you're just out exploring with the camera, film is, it's magic. It's really sad that we've lost it. We've lost being able to do it kind of more easily as part of like a professional workflow. No clients want to work with film. They don't want to let you go out and shoot something in film. It's way too risky. Half the job can get lost. Or, you know, there's so many steps along the way that something could happen. It's magic. There's a tactility to it, both in the process and in the actual end result, which just makes it amazing. But again, like the reason that you wanted to shoot medium format before was that you had these really, really nice, big, precise cameras with glorious lenses that you can get this texture in a dynamic range that you couldn't with digital before. And now I think digital kind of almost does that, especially with these new medium format cameras. I don't have as much of a need for shooting shooting film medium format anymore, because I feel like the digital cameras do that. But there's something about 35 still that there's just the magic. And also like large format film, you can't really do that with, so 4x5, 8x10, you can't match that with digital. There's just a creaminess in it, but there's that middle ground of like medium format that I think it's a little bit obsolete considering how good the new digital cameras are.
Yeah.
Cool. Not without exception, but you know, you can make some insanely good stuff on digital that you couldn't years ago. Like Stephen Shore started shooting with a digital medium format. He's been using digital for years, but his stuff that he's making with the digital medium format camera now looks like the stuff that he was making with the view camera in the 70s. It's incredible.
Oh, I have to check that out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And I think you have to stay open for like all the things that happen. I mean, I love analog as
totally.
Well. I love analog, and I always will, and love shooting like the editorials on film and everything. But at the same time, just for like some workflow and also like for you getting out of your comfort zone too, and just shooting digital as well, I think it complements each other, and it puts you as a photographer into like a new place as well.
Totally. Yeah, no, I think every modality that you can find a way to shoot in helps you see things in a different way. Helps you see things in a new way. You have to process them over a different span of time if you're using a 4x5 versus using just a little point and shoot or your phone. Like that immediacy with the phone is interesting for some things, but it's not interesting for other things. And all of the steps in between those, like, you know, the large format and the phone, there's just a completely different way of thinking about stuff. And also like with old film cameras, you had lots of different options for how you could see through the camera, whether it was a rangefinder or an SLR or a TLR, and I don't know, just there's all very cool different ways of kind of seeing the world that you're trying to represent, which kind of has gone away in the era of digital. It's all just you look through this little camera that you put in front of your face, and that's the way that we do it. And I think that leads to a homogenization of the way that we make images in a way that's not not necessarily pushing the art forward, but it also opens up different new possibilities that we didn't have before. So
yeah,
you can make videos with these little cameras that are incredible too. It's just, it's cool.
It's really amazing. Can you say what, like, what triggers something in you that wants to make that you want to take a picture? Like,
that's an abstract question, man. I don't know. I think after a certain amount of time, you just sort of learn to see in images. And if you're, you know, whether you're in the studio or just like walking down a street somewhere, you see something that looks compelling, and it can be anything. That goes back to the discussion that we were having earlier about people who just, you know, post one thing on Instagram. They shoot like neon signs or sneakers or whatever it is. Those are interesting to me, but I think it's more a question of kind of being able to there. And there's some people that do it in such incredible ways. They see things that you can't imagine that most people see. And I think that might have been the key to why I got a little bit of recognition at first, is I was going to these places in cities that were right there, they were hiding in plain sight, but nobody was looking at them. And so to kind of expose them on social media and to make giant prints of them that would end up in galleries or museums brought that sort of attention to them that they might not have had in a specific way. But man, I can think of 100 photographers who just make, like, I love Chris Maggio's work. He's cool. His stuff is very kind of fantastical, and it's very like, he's got this kind of warped sensibility. You can tell the guy has a really good sense of humor just through his photos. But he sees things in a way that, you know, nobody walking through New York City sees them like that. He makes it real with the camera. Or like Stacey Kranitz, right? She shoots rural America in a way that no one has for at least a generation, and it's a part of this country that's totally invisible, and she makes it visible. There's so many Japanese photographers who've done the same thing. It's cool.
I think, like, for me, photography nowadays is like also for seeing like places that I've never been to, but also like stepping into someone's head and having like a window into their
I think their that's eyes. The reason Instagram is cool. That's like the heart of why Instagram is cool, right? Because you, over time, you recognize someone's sight of something, right? You can see a photo and just be like, oh, that's Martin's.
Yeah.
Or, oh, that's, you know, whoever. In a way that used to only be possible for people who had the resources and the career to do like a big photo book or something. And now we kind of know our friends' sensibility, even if they're not photographers, right? Like you can see through someone's eyes in a way that's really cool. And you would think that would make people more empathetic, but it seems to be doing the opposite. I don't know. Maybe it's just because we're so crazy for attention that we need our point of view to be the one that they see first, but I don't know.
I think it's totally divided. Like, I think it's like so-and-so, like, as it's like within, like, for the discussion we had on the beginning, like with Instagram, it's for me, it's yin and yang. Like, it has a lot of good sides, it has a lot of bad sides. Like,
yeah,
for me, it has always been that. We spoke about like all the different cities that you've lived, and like places, some places that you've traveled to. And for some years now, I think you're living in LA, right?
Yeah, I've been here for 3 years now.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite spot in LA?
Oh man. That's a good question. Favorite single spot in LA. Maybe Musso and Frank's. It's an old restaurant in Hollywood from the 30s.
No, I've never.
Badass, like it looks like it did back in the 30s. It's like usually that it's one of those places that's closed right now because of COVID. I think they're still doing carry out, but the whole place is like about its ambiance. I love that place. Otherwise, I really dig the old stuff that survives. There's like, you know, dozens of places like steakhouses and bars and just things that are from another era that, for whatever reason, in LA, more of them kind of survive here than they do in a lot of other American cities. Whether because of their architecture or just because they're kind of like weird. those places here are really magical. There's a little crappy family restaurant in Glendale called Conrad's. There's one in Pasadena too, and they're both just really kind of boring, generic restaurants, but they look like they're right at, like you step in and you're like in 1975. Amazing. And it's completely unselfconscious. It's not like they're not trying to be retro, they're not anything, but you go in, like they have things on the menu like cottage cheese with like canned fruit and like wedge salads, and like it's just like old school food, and all the people that go there are like kind of old, but man, they make good old fashions. And it's like super chill, and you can just sit in there and like drink a cup of coffee and read a book, and you feel like you're in another time. And there are a few other places that are as unselfconsciously retro as that place is, but there are just lots of other places that kind of like, for whatever reason, survived.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's probably the single thing about LA that I like most. There's just a lot of places like that around here. There's a great old French restaurant called Tay. That's a spot in Echo Park, Silver Lake. You might have been there if you stayed in the neighborhood. Old steakhouse, I think from 1927, French restaurant, cool bar, lots of cool people hang out there every week, and it's about to be demolished. Oh, and it's so sad. Like these things can survive up to a certain point, but the land that it's sitting on is worth so much money that some developers, they already bought it and they're gonna build a stupid condo building there that will have no sense of place, and I don't know.
Yeah. I think the beauty of those places is, like, for one thing, that you can like step into another time when you like go through the door, mm-hmm. and you get a glimpse of like 1975, like you said before. And also, like, for me, like, I always have so much nostalgic feelings about places and like bars and restaurants and everything.
Yeah.
But all those places are like somehow timely limited, and either you've been there like during that time or like not. And then it kind of like everyone that's been around that time has like a common ground, like, and
I miss that place. It was so cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's funny how we share, but it's also funny how that, like, the market has no way of valuing that, right? Like, you think that developers would be smart enough to just be like, hey, people love this place, it's like people are in love with this place, it's got a history, it's got, let's leave it alone. I guess things have to make money when they're in an expensive city, but at the same time, like, why would you replace it with the thing nobody's gonna give a shit about?
Yeah.
Knock it down to build a stupid apartment building. Stupid, I don't know. That's the way American urbanism works, though.
Yeah. For me, it's like still like tearing out the soul of something, you know, like, because
completely.
Like,
completely. It's like the heart of a place.
Yeah.
Are these places that have these layers of memories in them, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
So, like, now you're living in LA, and of course, like, we have the current pandemic going on, but what are your next plans? Because, like, you also, like, what I didn't mention before, you also write amazing stuff sometimes as an editor, and, like, always when I come across the other work that you're doing, I'm always amazed by all the stuff that you're doing. So what are you up to at the moment, and what's next?
Oh, that's nice of you, man. So I'm working on a few editorial projects and some photo projects, but now in the lead up to the election, I'm going to definitely take another road trip a couple weeks before the election just to see. Before 2016, I drove around some of the states that Trump eventually won that he wasn't expected to win. So I went to Michigan, to Ohio, to Pennsylvania, and just kind of looked around and saw what I saw, and then he happened to win them a few weeks later, and it was just kind of a surreal experience. So I think I'm gonna do something similar to that. I don't know exactly where I'm gonna go yet, but I just wanna kind of see what it looks like out there. And I don't know if it'll produce anything, I don't know if I'll see anything worthwhile, or if I'll get in a fight or get shot, whatever. It's scarier now than it was back then, for some reason. You know, even driving around in the middle of the country with a California license plate on your car, it's like they just know that you're like a commie from California or something. I don't know. It's strange. So yeah, I just want to go see what I can see.
Amazing.
That's the next big thing, and then I'm doing like an informal little project with the really cool German furniture brand where I have a piece of their furniture, and I'm just taking it around with me and taking photos of it, like in in situ, and so I'm kind of excited about that. So it's a brand I really like, people that are really, really good people, and just a couple other things here and there.
Amazing. Cool. Yeah. I'm very happy to see you doing, like, because, like, we are seeing each other, like, recording the podcast. I'm really glad that we had the time to talk. And, like, if you've listened to the podcast before, I'm always, like, closing the podcast with the question, like, if you're, like, of course, like, if you imagine you're at the airport right now and you could take a flight anywhere you want to, where would you go to and why?
I thought about this before, but, you know, I have no idea. I'd probably go to Germany so we could actually, like, sit in a pub and have a beer and do this, like, in real life instead of over Zoom, because it's a bummer.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. I think my number one most desired to visit place, I want to go to Japan. I've never been there. It's, like, so far out of anything. I've spent time in China. I've been to Hong Kong. But I've never been to Japan. I really want to go there.
Well, I can't wait for the images that you're going to produce once you're there. And hopefully we'll be able to travel soon so we can do, like, the podcast episode number 2 in real life.
Yeah, man.
And also look at the pictures from you of Japan. So thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for the conversation, your honesty, and on a personal side, all the inspiration. Thank you so much.
You're a good dude. Thank you, man.